I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. In the opening scene of the film Apocalypse Now, there's a shot of jungle. Choppers pass. Toxic-looking, lemon-colored smoke curls up to obscure the trees. More choppers. And the whole scene turns orange with napalm. It is a picture that sticks in your mind like a painting. When you think of other such images, the train platform in the film Reds, or light streaming through Venetian blinds in Last Tango in Paris, what you're doing is recalling the artwork of the cinematographer Vittorio Storaro. Over 40 years now, he's been using the camera and film to, in his words, write with light. He's my guest this hour, here to explain just exactly what that means. We'd like to have you join our conversation. I mean, for example, do you ever take the time to notice the use of light and shadow, composition, color, when you're watching a film? Does it change the way you experience the story? Our number is 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Vittorio Storaro has won Academy Awards for his work on Reds, Last Tango, and Apocalypse Now. He's here with me in the studio. It's a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you very much for letting me be here.
There's something that I read about your preparation for Apocalypse Now, and I'm thinking of it just because I was listening to that powerful mix of choppers and music there. Yeah. And that is that back before the film was made, there's something about a Tarzan comic book which was part of the inspiration. I'm not sure if it was a comic book, but Tarzan was
the... It was the comic book that Bernd Hogarth designed. And he did a beautiful exhibition in Paris, and the French made a very beautiful book. A friend of mine gave me as a present, Luigi Bazzoni, because he was thinking to do a movie about Tarzan at that time, and I was so mesmerized by the incredible image. In learning about Bernd Hogarth, I realized that he was studying Michelangelo's drawing and painting. So practically he was designed like Michelangelo was painting, almost like a sculpture. And it was very powerful, particularly the pages that were in color. It became like a surrealistic jungle. So when Francis Coppola asked me to do Apocalypse Now, which honestly at the beginning I couldn't understand what I can bring into this movie from my side, from my culture, from what I used to do with the Bertolucci movie. They were so far away from a war movie. And Francis told me, Vittorio, please read Earth to Darkness from Joseph Conrad. Probably you will find your answer over there. There I realized the fact that there is one principle into that book. There was a denounce of one culture when overimposing itself on top to another culture made an act of violence. So I thought, oh my God, I mean, this is an incredible way that I can visualize this story in putting artificial energy, artificial color on top to natural color, on top to natural energy. And came to my mind this image that I saw about Bernd Hogarth being painted so surrealistic. And I brought this book to Francis.
The Tarzan book.
He loved it.
And in part, we see that in the film. We end up seeing this, I was going to use the word striking, but it's more powerful than that. There's something almost shocking about the way that the war images are juxtaposed on the countryside. And I think that's part of what you're...
Yeah, honestly, what the cinematographer does, without any doubt, is try to understand the main concept of the picture in reading the script and talking to the director, and after try to find the main visual concept where it can translate the story. In fact, that's why I call our work writing with light, because writing need time. Is something that you need at the beginning, a development, and an end. It's not like painting. Even if you're using a painting culture, a painting knowledge, but mainly you have to, like a musician, write with the note, a writer write with the words. We have to use light and the component, like what Leonardo da Vinci was to call the children of shadows and light are the colors, because it's a mixing between these two opposite element, two main element. We have this kind of vocabulary, a visual vocabulary that we can tell the story. So when I realized that I can use artificial color that the American army were using to give signal to the helicopter next to a rice field, using the Nepal bomb next to a sunset, using the magnetic explosion next to a dusk blue sky, I thought that that was a kind of visual conflict that they was telling me visually what the story was about. Was one element opposing the other one. At that moment, it was not in balance, of course.
Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. We're going to take a call from Augusta, Georgia. And is it Gurjot?
Yes, it is.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you for having me. I just wanted to say, actually, he actually answered the little question, but I'm a retired military person. One of the first movies I saw before I entered the military was Apocalypse Now.
You weren't in Vietnam then, Gurjot?
No. Mm-hmm. I was about 3 or 4 years after before my time.
Yes.
But, of course, those images and those ideas affected me when I joined the service, and I was a ranger, so, of course, I spent a lot of time in the jungle. I have the images he presented very much, especially when you spend a lot of time in the jungle, when you're moving through the jungle, when you're a soldier, you're an infantryman, a lot of that, the way he depicted it, it's kind of like that in your imagination when you remember back on it. But I went through the experience. I was wondering how the artist, the individual who put that cinematography together, how he was able to come up with that with such clarity.
Because I believe that cinematography is not using only technical element, and that's it. Should use also the philosophy, the meaning of what shadows mean, what light means. That's occurred to me soon after I finished my school, which was the Italian film school or several other schools that I did in photography. I realized that I was educated only one side, only in the technology side. And I realized that I need to know the other side, too. So I did some personal study about the philosophy from the ancient Greek philosopher to know the meaning of the vision. And I realized that's why I was able to do, for example, the sequence with Marlon Brando. They represented the colonel Kurtz totally in the mystery of black and revealing him step by step. Black means matter. Black means unconscious. Black means what we don't want to know or we don't know. We hide into black because we don't see. So he represents the symbol of the one part of the civilization that doesn't want to recognize part of himself. He denounced the horror of the war. That's why they will try to remove them. That's the idea to have him coming out step by step out of the light, revealing piece by piece, like in a psychoanalysis treatment. They're like a puzzle. You build one little segment after another till finally you can realize, putting together all these elements and see the face that represent that character, the horror of the war.
You spent some time as a student, though, studying the great masters in art, the Rembrandts and the Caravaggios, and I'm interested in knowing when, beyond the philosophy, did you learn some of what you can do with film by watching what they could do with oil painting?
Well, there is no doubt that today my generation is the continuation, the representation of everything was done before of us. Since the first graffiti done into a cave, since the first drawing, since the first painting, even if we don't know, we have in our inner soul the presence of the entire art of history, let's say. And of course, the more we have become conscious, particularly if you do you're professional in an art form, the more you know in a conscious way, the better. So that's why after the school, I realized that I need to know who were that specific painter, who was the other one, which kind of style representing the 15th century or the 17th century, so on. Because step by step, I have to be aware of what was done before me in order to continue their journey into visual art. And that's why I'm putting together all this research and study and knowledge. I'm publishing three books, a trilogy called Writing with Light, which is a trilogy that is not about myself, but it's about my study, my research. I practically put in a kind of order all the philosophic thought about vision. So from now on, any student, any new generation can start in some kind of ground and elevating this knowledge into the future visual art.
I wanted to let our listeners know that we have some images from your series of books, and they are spectacular books, beautifully put together with quotes from philosophers as well as stills from
exactly,
the films.
Exactly.
They're on our website, a gallery, just a sampling of some of the stills and the selections there. You can see that. We are at theconnection.org. A reminder to our listeners, we're at 1-800-423-8255. Vittorio Storaro, the cinematographer from Apocalypse Now. This song was also a key part of that, if you remember. The Golden Light on the River. We can talk a little bit more about that when we come back, but we'll also be talking about the other films and the other colors and the other ideas behind cinematography. 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection. Vittorio Storaro is one of the few to be given the Lifetime Achievement Award from the American Society of Cinematographers. He is the winner of numerous Academy Awards for his work and author of a three-volume collection called Writing with Light. Some stills from that collection are on our website. We're at theconnection.org. Our number is 1-800-423-8255 if you'd like to join our conversation this hour. One story that I read about you was that your father was a projectionist and you used to sit with him in the booth. Were you a very small child at that time?
Yeah, I probably was 7, 8, 11, those kind of age.
So this is just in the years after the war then?
Yes, practically. Once in a while my father was take with me at Luxfilm. Luxfilm was a big company in Italy in the 40s, 50s, 60s. And they had producing major thinking that Dino De Laurentiis and Carlo Ponti, they were working as a line producer for Luxfilm. They were practically producing the major history of cinema in Italy. And my father was the projectionist of them. So most of the time I was next to him in the booths and was with my little hands covering the carbon light from reflecting on the glass. And I was looking at images of films. And into the booths there is no sound, because usually it's too noisy. So I was almost thought that cinema was without words. So I was used to just watching images. And that gave me the concept that cinema is a language of images.
At the time, was it mainly black and white? Or was there was color coming?
Mainly black and white, because that was around 50, 52, 54. Let's say color mainly came after 54, there were very few color films made by Technicolor at that time, but most of the film was in black and white.
Do you think that it helped you establish some kind of understanding of the importance of light and shadow without color?
Well, that's probably, I was educated in that way, no doubt. Even in school, at the Italian film school, we were doing very little experiment about color, but we were not really educated properly, in my opinion. So, without any doubt, when I done my first film, Giovinezza, Giovinezza, directed by Franco Rossi, it was in black and white once again. And I just was thinking about shadows and light. Even when I went into color, I was continuing to think in shadows and light or penumbra. I was not aware of the meaning of colors. The emotion that I had in The Conformist, in doing old Paris blue, was something that came to my mind from an emotional point of view, but not from a rational one. When I went into the orange of the same city, like Paris, in Last Tango in Paris, once again it was an emotional connection, an emotional idea. Only after 1900, only after Apocalypse Now, really, when I really stopped it to work, because after Apocalypse Now, there were no any other movie that was worth it. And I realized that if I was continue shooting movies, I was just doing a copy of what I already done. So I realized, this is an advice I always give to a young student, when you are on the most important moment in your life, stop and try to become student once again. Try to go deeper in your roots. Try to escape your roots. Try to become student once again and continue to educate in yourself. And that's how I did an incredible jump into the light itself, and I discovered this incredible world of colors. And only after that experience, it took me 1 year of study, closed myself into the house, that I was able to restart with a much more knowledgeable way, more the will of discovering something new. The symbology of color in La Luna of Bernardo Bertolucci, the physiology of color in One from the Art of Francis Coppola, the connection between life and light of The Last Emperor was really the product of that experience that I had in restudy everything from the beginning.
Little Pouilly, I have decided that you will be the new lord of 10,000 years. You will be the son of heaven.
Connection listeners, I ask you to lean on your imagination here. This is the point when the monks are charging through the palace room around the corpse of the queen, the small boy standing at the foot of the steps. It is such a powerful mix of color that's going on in that room. When I think back and the light streaming in through the windows, when you talk about the mix of color and life, does that mean that you're doing it in some kind of mathematical way, that if there's orange, there's that emotion, if there's yellow, there's this emotion? Do you know what I mean?
The main concept of The Last Emperor was to put in relation these two main elements, our life and the light itself, which is energy. We have in our lives several age, several moments. Light has several color within itself. So I was presenting to Bernardo the concept that while we are now representing the birth of Ausin Gioro Pugli as an emperor when he was 3 years old, with the color red, which is the first color of the color spectrum, we're presenting orange, which usually represent 5 years age, when you need the feeling of the warm embrace of your mother, the warm feeling of your house. And after we present in yellow, when he's crowned as an emperor, they represent the puberty age, when you have consciousness about your...
Wisdom? Is that part of yellow? Or?
No, wisdom is a little later, let's say. This is consciousness. It's when you know which is your... which kind of sex you belong to. And green is a color of knowledge. You're 20 years age. And blue is more between the 30 and the 50 years, when you are the maximum concentration of your energy and your intellectual will. It is the color of freedom. And indigo is the color you're 50, 60 years old, when you have the matter power, when you are really in charge, when you are part of the... You resume... next to you, everything you seminate, everything you've done in your life. Finally, you have the power to, let's say, to use all these results. In violet, which is the last color of the color spectrum, is the moment when you are giving away your knowledge, when you transfer your knowledge to a new generation, when you are practically finished your journey, white is the sum of every single color, which is the sum of the light, is when you become really in balance with yourself, in equilibrium. And I put all this color connected with the life of Jinjiro Puyi. So when he cut his own vein, we see red. And remember, in the way that he was born as an emperor, in the scene we just heard the music, we have the orange beam coming through, because that was his new house. But it was the Forbidden City. That was the new family. It was 3,000 a eunuch. And when we see yellow of him, it's when they crowned him. We see green only when the English tutor is coming to bring him knowledge, what was going on outside the Forbidden City. We see blue in the movie only when he's been thrown out from the Forbidden City, when he's in the English Country Club. We see the indigo window behind him when he takes decision to rule once again in Manchukuo. We see violet only in the screening room when he's really put on his shoulder all the sins that he think that he had, all the responsibility for China. And we see white when they give it to him, the diploma, as a free man. We put that with Bernardo, the white snow on the floor.
I think I'm never going to be able to see the film again without going through that in my mind. It's a great description. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. Vittorio Storaro is my guest, the cinematographer, and we're going to Groton Mass for our next call. Sarah's with us. Hi, Sarah.
Hi there. My question is about the role that the music plays in marrying the images and the music and the colors and how you know, does the music come first or does it come after your images are complete, and how do you work with the composers to make a complete vision?
Yeah, it's a good question, how the role of the cinematographer works there.
Thank you. I think it's a wonderful question. To be honest with you, I'm very ignorant in music. And most of the time that I was going through the philosophic meaning of light and color, I tried to make connection with music, but I didn't have enough knowledge to do that. The picture that I done with about Wagner or Verdi, and I tried to make connection with the let's say the seven color with the seven note, it was for me something too simple, connection between one and the other. I was need some more knowledge about music in order to do in the proper way the connection. I was preparing a scribing symphony that was wrote in connection with color and music, but all the time I go mainly with the story, because my ignorance of music, to be honest with you. Normally in cinema, first is the story, second is the vision of the story, so this the cinematography, because when we shoot the movie, normally we don't know the music. When the music, the film has been finished shooting, it has been edited, that the musician has come on board and he see the first edited version of the picture. From that tape, from that edited version, he start to play the music. So usually it's the musician that take inspiration from images, then the other way around. Only in very few occasions, like with Francis Coppola, we had the Ride of the Valkyrie on the set when we done Apocalypse Now, but mainly was inspired me for the camera movement more than with the light and color. And I'd love to have some student that can take this my experience and bring more in ahead, more develop this concept between music and color. I really would love to have that.
There's a place where the visual memory and the audio memory of the film come very much together. I want to remind our listeners our numbers, 1-800-423-8255. We're going next to Roanoke, Virginia, and Tom is with us on the line. Hi, Tom.
Yes, hi. Yes, I had a question of your guest. I wanted to ask about shot composition. I've noticed in several of his films, and good films I enjoyed out there in the movie world, about distance on the frame sometimes, and I believe this was true in Last Tango, as well as in Red, you'll have an actor or two in a scene, and they're literally at the far left of the frame, and there may be space or nothing going on much to the right in the frame, and you're waiting as an audience member perhaps for someone to walk into the frame, or you notice things going on, and it sort of gives you a sort of a, I guess it's sublime, really, your thought process about what's going on with those actors in the scene and their place in the world. And I'll hang up and listen, but I just kind of wanted to ask your guest about what decisions he makes versus the director about shot composition. Thank you very much.
Thanks for your question, Tom.
Well, particularly in Italy, we've been educated that the director is the responsible for the composition of the camera movement. Not all the director knows better than the cinematographer. Not every director has the will to do that. Particularly Bernardo Bertolucci and Carlos Aura, for example, in my experience, they need to do that by themselves. They presented to me, they asked me my opinion, but it's really Bernardo and Carlos need to frame in that shot or to have that kind of movement. With Mr. Coppola or Mr. Bitti is myself, they're preparing for them the composition of the movement, they give me the approval, like practically any other director, apart from Bertolucci and Carlos Aura. But no doubt that cinema is a language of images, and composition is the what make a painting, a drawing, a film frame, an expression in art. The composition is the most important thing, probably, for any visual artist. That's why my fight recently to have a unique composition for cinema and television is so very important, because we are very much frustrated that we are framing in one specific composition for cinema, particularly in the United States, after in order to go in television and have a full screen, the image is being cut on the side. So practically, you changing the composition, you change the physical state of the image.
This is starting to change, though. I mean, you go to the television stores, you'll see a lot more of the widescreen 16:9.
Thanks God, that step by step now with the digital world, we try to educate the audience to respect, to see the original composition. But in the and more and more and more that the television screen get closer to this film screen, we're going to see exactly what it is, but not yet, because even the large screen today is 16:9, really have still a big difference with, for example, for an anamorphic picture. We lose so much information on the right and the left. The change in the composition, or changing the meaning sometimes of the image, changing the meaning of the film itself, is, if you like to. That's why I invented a system called Univisium, which means in Latin a unique vision between cinema and television. And the idea was from Leonardo da Vinci when he painted the Last Supper. He did what he called the divine proportion, 2:1, 2 times the horizontal, mm-hmm. for 1 time the vertical, which is so more in balance with our vision, is so more in a middle ground between the film screen and the video screen. This is fundamental to respect the author's right, in order that everything we compose, practically, we can be respected and not mutilated, and the audience will to see and hear an image on theater, on video screen, exactly in the way it's been composed originally.
Connection listeners, a chance for you to join my conversation this hour with the cinematographer, Vittorio Storaro. He's the man behind Apocalypse Now, Red's The Last Emperor. He's also the author of a series of books called Writing with Light. It is what he does. Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.
I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.
Drunk your champagne for the warm. And then I ordered you a scotch and you haven't drunk your scotch. Now come on, just a sip for Daddy. Now, if you love me, you'll drink all of it.
Okay, I love you.
Bravo.
Tell me about your wife.
Brando and Schneider, 1972. Wow, that was 33 years ago, Last Tango in Paris. It's hard to... I had a chance to see it again recently, and I wanted to say, Vittorio, that I think you're being very humble when you say it's the director who puts... Because there's so much going on in the picture that we see with light and shadow, that is exactly what you're bringing to it. Whether or not it's Brando lounging in a dark corner of the apartment, almost out of sight, or something like that tango scene in the crowded restaurant, there's a lot of clues. A lot of the story is being told to us by you.
Yeah, of course, because cinema is a common language, is a common work. It's not a single one. And no doubt, like in an orchestra, we need the director. They lead us in a to put together all the creativity from the writer, the composer, the production designer, the cinematographer, the actor, in a one unique art form, which is film. No doubt that single creativity, particularly in cinematography, we should never forget that cinema is a language of images. A image belong to light.
But can I interrupt you for a moment here? Because in your book, Writing with Light, there are stills from the film. One of them that's still stuck in my mind is Michelle Pfeiffer. I think it's Lady Hawk is the name of the film.
Yes.
You can't even see most of her face. It's covered with shadow and a hood. It's an arresting still. And I'm looking at that and I'm thinking to myself, so does Vittorio compose a still and then let the action happen, or is he thinking about the pictures as they move?
Well, when I prepare in the shot for, like in this case, for Richard Donner, of course, cinematography has a major difference in photography. Photography in Greek means writing with light. Cinematography has the tendenza kino, which is motion. So you always have to think that the story should start, develop, and have his own peak, and have to have an ending. In photography, it's like more close to painting, so you have to tell the entire story in one single image. Mm-hmm. When you take in a still, practically you are much closer to a painting feeling than the cinematography. That's why in my books there are so many double exposure images, because I don't think I'm a good photographer. I probably can be a good cinematographer, you know, in a sense that I need more than one image, more than one single moment in order to tell the story. So in doing the photography into that trilogy book are made directly in the camera on the same frame, shooting first one image and after another image on the same frame before to develop. So they are all original double exposure because I need a relationship between two characters, between two elements, between two places, between two thought, in order to make the story.
Let's go back to our phone lines to Bristol, Rhode Island. And just a reminder for our listeners, our number is 1-800-423-8255. There may be a picture, there may be an image, there may be a sequence from one of the films that we've been talking about on the program, and this is your opportunity to find out what's going on actually behind the scenes. 1-800-423-TALK. Bristol, Rhode Island. Michael's with us. Hi, Michael.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, thanks for calling.
Yes, I had a question for Vittorio. Hello, Vittorio, how are you?
Hi, very good, thank you.
You talked about the correspondence between the developmental processes a person goes through in their life and the color spectrum. But could you talk about the correspondence between the color spectrum and emotions and how to reconcile the potential conflict between the color the color spectrum vis-a-vis a person's emotions and the color spectrum vis-a-vis their development in their life?
Well, particularly one from the heart. I was facing one specific thing. I realized that the human being respond to color, respond to light, for one simple reason. Light and color is energy, really. This energy arriving on different wavelengths on top of our body. We don't see that only with our own eyes, but with the entire body. Practically, our body is like a photographic emulsion. The taking this vibration and react to it. When I went to Las Vegas with Francis Coppola for the first location, originally we were thinking to do the movie directly in Las Vegas. And I realized why this, there is in the middle of the desert this incredible city made by light. And I realized, and go deeper into this study of the Greek philosopher, the human being since ever has been used to be reached by energy of light from sun. And this energy arriving on the human body gives to you the feeling of acting physically. So in the practically since ever we are connected with the sun journey. So when the sun rising at dawn, you feel this energy coming up in your body. You have the physical need to have physical action. And you go to do your day's life, let's say. And when the sun going the setting time and the moon is rising, you have the normal since ever feeling or rest, to have a sentimental moment, to have more reflective moment. So you finish your physical activity, you start in more the intellectual activity. Las Vegas doesn't want to do that. They want you to keep you alive. They want you to keep in your physical activity. Why? Because you have to gambling. So they raise in all the light that is possible to take you in a continual eternal daytime.
To take your money.
To take your money.
1-800-423-8255 to join the conversation. There was one thing that I wanted to ask you about, and again goes back to Last Tango, because I'm wondering how your own view of the craft of editing has changed the work of the cinematographer. There's something almost comforting but also a little bit unsettling about directors and cinematographers who will let a scene breathe a little bit more than we get to see. These days, today we see a lot more, it seems we see editing being much more an important part of the construction of a scene and the way that we experience it. And I wonder if there's ever a moment as a cinematographer where you kind of put your hand over your eyes and you go, you broke something when you made that cut.
Well, it's true. I mean, sometime up. But of course, being once again a quality art form, and the director is the responsible to take the final decision. So it's up to him to let the editor cut the sequence in one way or not. No doubt that new technology can be very dangerous in the sense that since before the electronic system to editing, they were using to use Moviola, so they were watching image on a small screen. But usually soon after, director and editor were going on the big screen projector and watching on the big screen if every cut was working. Today, with all the electronic system, they used to watching just on the Avid or similar system in a small electronic screen. And practically, they take decision to cut the movie compared to the emotion they have from the small screen. So sometimes, if they don't see very well the reaction of an actor, they cut right away in a close-up. Right. Today's education from video music, from publicity, or you have to tell the story in very short time, in 30 seconds. That's kind of education getting to people, movie people mind. And now, unless you chopping back and forth every sequence very fast, you go right away in a close-up, you feel that doesn't work. They almost lost the movie experience. In my opinion, the more we are bringing back in the editing room a large screen, so an editor and the director can see, because more and more and more every monitor or television set is getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And now we should go back to the movie experience, so to the fact that we really were able to feel the emotion of the person, even if he's in full figure, not completely in close-up. That's the major problem today in the film industry.
Let's go back to our lines, to Lexington, Kentucky, and Eli is joining us. Hi, Eli.
Hello.
You're a cinematographer as well, I understand.
Yes, I am, and I would like just to say that so many of us are indebted to Sestraro for his brilliant use of the film medium. My question is, what attracts you to new projects? Is it the director's previous work, a script, perhaps the imagistic potential of the premise?
Thank you very much for these questions. No doubt that I don't think that every cinematographer can do movie with every director or to do every story. I think that in an unconscious way from the beginning, we select the project that they're approaching to us because we feel that the story almost belongs to us too. There is something into the story that is part of the question that we have to solve. There is something connected with our own life. Of course, sometimes we take a decision to say yes or not to a project because we need, for practical reason. But to be honest, very rarely we do that. If we are really conscious, we select the story, or we approach it to a great master like director because we respect him, or we respect the way that he's thinking and we want to do it. But mainly because he's go in one direction on in his life, there is similar direction where we want to go. So practically we follow the instinct or the knowledge or the consciousness of ourselves to go in one specific direction because we need to go there, because we need to give answer to our own question, because practically what we do in working, we are using our creativity to express ourselves because we need to know to understand the meaning of our own life. That's the main point. And many times happened to me that I say no to a project. Sometimes it was a brilliant director. Sometimes it was a great story, a great project. But I was going to another direction, something that I was not interested to go, something that I was not interested to investigate. At the end, when somebody asked me, what is your favorite film, the best movie that you've done in your life, is the film of my own life. The film of my own life is made by all these different segments, movie by movie, because at the end, we always do the same story. We always do the same movie. Any artist is doing always the same things, over and over, try only to go deeper because he need to understand himself.
1-800-423-8255 to Lexington, Massachusetts next. Jeff's on the line. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, how are you? Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
Mr. Storaro, first of all, I'm, as a filmmaker, I've admired your work for many years, and thank you for all the breakthrough.
Thank you.
Visuals that you've treated us to. I'm interested in the film One from the Heart that you shot with Francis Ford Coppola.
Yes.
And if I'm not mistaken, that was one of the first films that used CGI.
CGI, Jeff?
Computer graphic integrated in with the film. Is that not correct?
No, it is not correct. The entire picture was never used one image on CGI. Everything was done on the set.
The opening shot, that long opening shot that goes through the window of the the restaurant,
is completely done on the set, and there is only a cross dissolve between one scene to another. When we go through we started with a steady cam. The main credit, the title, was done in a model. And when the snorkel camera went through the model at the end, practically we pick up from the studio, inside the studio, on the stage, on a Steadicam. Gary Brown was on a crane on a Steadicam, came down for the entire view of Las Vegas Strip, and came through the crowd, stopped in front to the window, and went through the window till the close-up of Terry Garr, and we turned off the light of the entire stage directly while we were shooting, and I turned on the light on the other side of the two-way mirror to see the other leading character on the other side. practically is only cross dissolve, as far as we know, as I know. Everything was done on the set.
I wonder what happens to a cinematographer in an era when so much is filmed against what we and just lay people know as the blue screen or the green screen, where the background and everything else is painted in post-production later. I mean, that must be something that makes it very difficult to be an artist.
Well, no doubt that all the new technology can help us, particularly give it to us the chance to go more into our fantasy and create an image in a much more easy way that was done long time ago. But in order to answer to your question, I tell you a story about Dune, Frank Herbert Dune, the series that I did with John Harrison, and we shot in Prague a few years ago. Originally, the movie was supposed to be done in a desert, but they realized, being for a television series, it was much too expensive to do in a real desert. All the scene, not in the middle of the day, but particularly at dawn or sunset. So they thought to do in a studio only on the green screen, and that's all. A journalist was terrified about this idea because they say, oh my God, my actor will not have any reference of where is going on behind them. They don't know anything about the environment. So when we met each other, I present to him the idea that we were using with Carlos Aura and the help of my son, he's working on a visual effect company, that we practically build from painting or from photograph huge images printed on a kind of plastic material. So it's a fixed images, but at least it's an images. And I created some example for John Harrison of the desert through my slide that I did in the desert. I mixed it with wonderful painters. David Roberts is an Orientalist English painter, in creating this magic world. And he loved it. Practically, we printed 300 feet for 30 feet high image, so the actor were feeling where they were.
My guest this hour, Vittorio Storaro, painting his magic world for us. It's been great having you on the program. Thanks for your time.
Thank you very much for having me here, because I love to share any emotion that I had in my life with all the gentlemen that hear me from your radio station.
And if you get a chance to go to our website at theconnection.org, you can see some of the stills from some of the fine work of Mr. Storaro. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.